Today's episode of the Sidebar Podcast is brought to you in part thanks to How Lit Are You, Bro? A new millennial exchange service that releases words from mouths in innovative, barely distinguishable ways so you can sound in without being left out, even if you don't have the slightest idea what you're talking about. How lit are you, bro? Bro, I'm not even lit. Yo, neither am I, bro. Yeah, bro. Yeah? Yeah. Bro, don't succumb to places that aren't lit and people who aren't. Try our new exchange service today. Just enter code LIT at howlitbro.com for free lights and unlimited lits. Bro, how lit are you, bro? Not that lit. And that's the problem.
You're in Guadalajara, eating chiles from Peru, when you realize Chinese food is so much better. Welcome to the Sidebar. I'm Clint Myers Novak, filling in for Sebastian Morales, who is currently building doorways for door-challenged houses. Quick Service and Casual Restaurant Magazine, or QSR, is a business-to-business magazine for limited-service restaurant segments, which include quick service, also known as fast food, and casual restaurants. Jonathan Finkman is a frequent contributor to QSR Magazine, and he formerly was the writer of the article, Who Truly Is the King? A Deep Analysis of Burger King. He writes a secret article every month, and we are excited to be the first to hear what it is this time. Jonathan, welcome to the Sidebar.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's honestly an honor to be here. There's just so much that's just honorable about this whole thing, and being able to discuss with you my next article is honestly just, I'm so excited.
Well, we at the Sidebar wear badges of honor around every single day, and they are color-coded based on how much honor we have won for the month. My colleague and mortal enemy, Sebastian Morales, has a black sticker, which is actually the bottomless pit. And then the top is a orange, which is the sunshine.
Well, I would think black is the void of color, so that would seem like it'd be not in there.
Henceforth, it's the beginning step and also the end step for a lot of times.
That is beautiful.
Now, how did you get into the quick service writing game?
Well, it was a chance encounter. You see, I work as a sociology professor over at Brown University. And I went to a White Castle late one night. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with White Castle? They have the tiny, you might call them sliders, but we call them little burgers.
They have very small burgers, which I, as a younger man, ate in great quantity. And it really did some stuff to my belly, as it were.
As it should, you know? I mean, that's how you know that it's really working. If your digestive tract is differentiating itself from the rest of your body, if you feel it moving and motivating itself to do something different outside of you as a person, that's how you know you're eating some good quality fast food.
So this chance encounter in a White Castle caused you to think of your digestive tract actually as a other body aside from yourself.
Well, I got shot, actually. So
and
I was there, it was 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. Someone came in waving a gun, give me all the money. You with a cell phone, why are you crying? Mm-hmm. I said, hey, buddy, let's calm this down. I just came here to get a salad. You know, a couple gunshots later, I'm shot in my small and large intestine.
And our beloved research at the intern, Addie Harper, actually handed me one of the x-rays. You got shot directly in the colon.
Right in the colon.
And it was something that really opened you up to the different pathways of your digestive body.
Yeah, and honestly, if it wasn't for White Castle being in my system at the time, we wouldn't be having a conversation.
Of course, you had the salad from White Castle, and that's a pretty risky proposition to have a salad from White Castle along with a bullet in your colon.
Yeah, as many people know, the White Castle salad contains melted Freda cheese, which is their version of feta cheese. I'm not sure where the R came from or what it stands for. But as soon as I had that, mixed in with little pieces of beef and chicken slider, and they also drenched it in ranch. In fact, you couldn't see anything but white for miles with that salad, I'll tell you that much.
And you, of course, were inspired by this salad that had been in your tract and actually absorbed the bullet into itself in order to look into the digestive tract and how to exercise it through fast food meals.
That salad saved my life, honestly speaking.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And ever since then, I've dedicated my life to exclusively working in the field of, you know, quick service restaurants, you know.
And so that led you to teaching. I myself am an adjunct professor at Northwestern.
Oh.
Yes. I teach a class on criminology and sociology this semester, and we are diving right in. But what does it mean?
Well, I hope you guys find that guy that shot me, because the NYPD sure enough didn't.
Well, what's the cross-section between being a professor and being in the digestive system?
Well, a lot of it has to really do with the fact that people want to write off the quality of fast food. People believe that fast food is very American, very blasé, very aggressive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my firm belief is that, like a digestive system, it is part of our bodily eco. You know, you consume it. You let it go through your stomach. You poop it out. It's then flushed. Then it's flushed through a drainage system. There might be an alligator. There might be a crocodile. There might be a rat. But it's going to grab that poop, and it's going to run with it.
So do you think that fast food, in a way, has its own autonomy, has its own intelligence that is able to influence a human body?
Oh, 100%. Anytime I have a chicken sandwich or a burger or a taco from Taco Bell, the first thing I do is I have a conversation with it. I get to know who that animal was and who they're trying to be.
So my question for you, and you have had some writing on this, but I will just reiterate for our readers, you actually believe that the salad that saved you should be given posthumously an award, a Medal of Valor.
Yes.
So you think it is important for a person to have a relationship with the food, especially the fast food, because a relationship can't be too fast.
Exclusively the fast food. If you go to a fancy restaurant like an Olive Garden or a Red Lobster or, you know, a hometown buffet, don't talk to that food. That food has kind of an attitude to it. I've tried and gotten nowhere. I've gotten looks and stares and gotten asked to leave restaurants. I'm actually banned from several Outback steakhouses.
Wow. Okay. And Outback, the Bloomin' Onion is not the talkative type, I'm guessing.
The Bloomin' Onion doesn't bloom with conversation, I guess you could say.
I understand. And of course, you are here on the sidebar to unveil your next upcoming article. What is the title of this article?
Yes. So I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the People of New York and People of Los Angeles interview segments. And I felt that QSR really needed something to play into that in our own way. So I am unveiling my new series called Who's Schnitzeling My Wiener?
Who's Schnitzeling My Wiener?
Who's Schnitzeling My Wiener, yes.
And that's when you go into the back kind of food courts of the hot dog world.
Yeah, mostly, you know, the wiener schnitzel circuit, and finding out about the cooks, finding out about the servers, finding out about the cleaning staff, finding out about the guy who sleeps outside. I want to know who is schnitzeling my wiener.
And you actually went undercover into the German wiener circuit to try and get a deeper dive. As a journalist, I definitely appreciate.
Precisely, yeah. I did the interview process. I actually shaved my head and grew a mustache just so I could feel what it's like. So I went in, I worked as a cook. I had to work my way up, actually. They made me clean a lot without gloves, which I thought was weird. And I also got to package some of the hot dogs as well as make some of the hot dogs. And it's a lot tougher of a process than many people would like to believe.
Mm-hmm. And you found that there are different ways in which Wiener Schnitzels are prepared. Mm-hmm. You can have them rolled, you can have them stuffed and braised. What was the most interesting way for you that you learned how to prepare a schnitzel, a wiener?
Well, a lot of people are familiar with the dog of corn. Some people might refer to it as a corn dog.
Mm.
The way that it is pickled with a stick is you take two fingers, preferably your index and middle finger, and you get a stick of corn. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to bread that corn with flour. You take your two fingers, and then you finger a hot dog, okay? Then you put the hot dog with your fingers inside of the breaded corn, and that's how the stick is made, because the think of it like a symbiotic a baby being born.
Mm.
You know, it's resonating with itself and saying, oh, I need something hard in me, and that's where the stick comes from. A lot of people think it's popsicle sticks, but that wouldn't make sense because popsicles are for popsicles.
And popsicle sticks only belong to popsicles.
Exactly.
Instead, you need something for the dog of corn specifically, the corn dog,
yes,
as it were. And how do you think a corn dog or the schnitzel, how do you think the schnitzel circuit affects a tract, a digestive tract, different from, say, White Castle or Burger King, what you studied before? What are the differences on the body?
Well, you have to remember that hot dog meat comes from really all over the world. Burger King, of course, is royalty burgers, so they are imported from England and Great Britain and the UK. Whereas with White Castle, again, it is of royalty, but kind of a lesser royalty, like a Eastern European meat, a lot of Russia, a lot of Bulgaria, a lot of Kazakhstan.
Mm.
So they ship that over, and that's how we get White Castle burgers. But with Wiener Schnitzels and wieners and dogs, it's a lot of meat from goats and sheep and lamb and dog and horses and cow and chicken and pork. And someone by the name of, he was a German philosopher named Schnitzel von Dinkendube.
And he is, of course, a well-known meat philosopher in the German times. He and Nietzsche, actually, very good friends. And they had many different arguments about the true essence of what it was to exist and how food could affect your existence.
Yeah, and the thing about Schnitzel is he had an eye for meat. You know, he could look at a meat and say, mm-mm, not today, and would know when to freeze it, would know when to put it in the refrigerator, would know if it's supposed to be left out for 24 hours to 40 hours. This is before thermometers existed.
Mm-hmm.
This is before we knew about time.
So what is meat and an existential meaning if Schnitzel von Dinkendube had his breakthrough in meat preparation before time, before thermometers? What is meat in an existential way to you?
To me, meat is man. And this is what I tell my students all the time. You know, as soon as they walk in, I write it on the board, meat is man. Meat is you. Meat is me. We could put our meats in our mouths right now. We could just pull out all our meat and put it in each other's mouths.
And you, of course, majored in meat during your studies, and you have started at Brown College a meat major for all of your students. And it's very popular. Especially among males.
Yeah, a lot of the fraternities really enjoy, they've actually started a new trend, you know, I'm not as hip, I'm 44, but called suckling, where they, instead of fully digesting or chewing the meat, they'll just put the meat at the nip of their mouth and tongue.
And just get a little taste of it.
Yeah, just a little taste, and they pass that around.
Mm. Yeah. So take us through the syllabus of a semester in your meat class.
Okay, well, you know, for the semester, we, of course, have our introduction to class, as any teacher would do.
Of course.
And then we go into kind of a home recreational style week or of such, where we really want to let the class know that they are capable of doing this as well. Mm-hmm. So I give them different ingredients that don't really match up, you know, like candy apples and flour and Oreos and ground beef, and tell them to make what their heart desires. Mm-hmm. And we want to see what they think this class is about.
And one that, of, sorry, go
no,
on.
No, no, that eliminates half the class right there.
And it's a hard cut system where it's cut. By the end of the semester, very few, it's about 30% are left. So it's a 70% attrition, either by choice or forced out of the class.
Yes, it's essentially our own little version of Hell Kitchen or Great British Bake Off or Queer Eye, if you will.
Of course. And you have in those preparations, that's the test meet. So a meet fail. Describe what that might look like to you.
For me, a meet fail would be if you decide that the ground beef isn't loose enough. Mm. If you try to firm up the ground beef, if you try to roll it, that's something that always bothers me. My ground beef to be loose. I like it to look like a Jerry curl.
It has to sag a little bit.
Yeah, I like saggy beef.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, if a student falls behind, if they are in danger of becoming one of the 70%, they can always do extra meat.
Yes.
What is your most creative, one of the more creative extra meats that you got actually involved, flours as well as meats? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had one student who, well, the ingenuity on this young woman, she made bacon daffodils. I still don't know how. She won't reveal her secret, which, you know, that means that's the making of a great meat chef right there.
Of course.
Yeah. So she had bacon daffodils, and I said, show me more. The next time she came into class, she had bacon-wrapped sushi rolls. So it was all bacon, all pork, all meat, all ham. Beautiful.
But sushi. Now, our beloved researcher, the intern, Addie Harper, tried her hand at an extra meat in preparation for this this exact interview, and she dealt with about 5 pounds of chicken on her own, and she slipped on a puddle, and she now has salmonella in her eyeball. So that's something that she is trying to get over, and please donate at thesidebarpodcast.com to help Addie recover from salmonella of the eye.
You know, that's the exact reason we have a disclaimer for the class. Because we know the dangers of dealing with meat and meat preparation. We make sure everyone signs a consent form knowing that they might not live throughout the semester. I've lost 4 students.
Already? In this semester?
In this semester, yeah.
And it was through various causes. One of them just choked.
Yes, of course.
But 2 of the students, I believe, got into a meat fight.
That's right, yeah.
And that led to disastrous consequences.
You see, I like to do outreach to a lot of people in various communities, and it turns out that they are a part of rival meat gangs.
Mm-hmm.
One, of course, representing pork, the other representing chicken. And not knowing this, I enrolled them in my higher percentile class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they apparently had beef, no pun intended, from the streets.
Oh.
Unfortunately, it led to the meat tragedy. Which, yeah, I'm sure a lot of you have read about in the news.
The Brown College meat tragedy is very well documented. That leads me to actually something I wanted to talk about. You talked earlier about different places that Burger King and White Castle will get their meats. You talked about royalty of meats. There is definitely a hierarchy of meats. So how do the meat gangs fill into that hierarchy? Are they fighting for the top spot?
Well, you have to really scale it back to the fact that a lot of the governing bodies of the meat industry and the fast food industry kind of built this whole thing of, you know, how do we ruin these underappreciated and underprivileged communities? And that's when they distributed meats like Slim Jims. And when Slim Jims, and of course we all are familiar with teriyaki beef jerky,
of course,
had their own rivalries in smaller sectors that then grew to these wars between pork and turkey, and you know, in some cases, especially in the South and the Midwest, even deer meat is highly prized to the fact that a lot of people fight over it.
And Florida, of course, gator meat became one of the biggest ones.
Very big, yes. And peacock meat, for some reason, which you wouldn't really expect. I
would have expected that to be illegal.
You would think that, but if you haven't had peacock meat, you got to get one of those cocks in your mouth. I got to tell you.
Well, if cocks will be in mouths, it will be in Florida.
Yeah,
Florida is a lawless place where a lot of things are just allowed.
It's wild, but they actually, and I shouldn't be revealing the secret, but Disney World in Florida and QSR has actually allowed me to talk about this, and hopefully, you know, we'll get undercover with it. But Disney World is using peacock meat
inside of their sandwiches. So a turkey leg at Disney World might be partly peacock.
Yes, you're putting a giant cock's leg in your mouth when you go to Disney World.
That is just disgusting. I am appalled.
As you should be.
When I was covering Hurricane Sandy and my Pulitzer Prize winning turn as a journalist, I saw people resort to eating all sorts of meats, but I never thought cock meat would be the thing that people would sell in Disney World.
The thing is, it's very gamey, it's very rich, it's very somehow salty, even before you season it. And putting that with a sandwich, making that a quick service type of cock, you know, it comes really fast to the customer, to the consumer. And I think a lot of companies especially, really just jumped on that process.
And because of the gang violence that, the meat gang violence that has descended onto the Florida area, cock meat fighting has become much more prevalent.
Oh my goodness, yes. And I, again, that's, I'm doing an investigative report on this within the coming months, and it should be a documentary on Netflix soon as well. We've done a lot of research and a lot of work on that.
So. And cock meat is very expensive, so I'm shocked that people are able to get it in such quantity.
Well, the thing is, you can get it either cut or uncut, and I think that's where a lot of it comes in for the expensiveness. So if you want it uncut, it does have a little bit more of a rigidness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you get it cut, it is a smoother surface, but it does lose a little bit of the feeling.
So what are some of the styles of fighting? Because everybody's fighting to be the top cock. So how do you get to there? Because the cock meat can be handled in a bunch of different ways.
Well, you know, as opposed to the regular cockfighting, what peacock fighting does is we put two tiny little balls onto the legs of the peacocks as opposed to razor blades.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever can knock the other cock out with its balls typically ends up being the victor.
And you have to be very deft with your balls in order to knock out the other peacock.
Oh, yes. You have to have very strong balls for this.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they're made of brass or iron.
Yes, a lot of very strong balls, a lot of very tough balls. I mean, these are definitely balls you wouldn't want anywhere near your face. They will knock you out.
Now, is peacocking a factor in this fighting circuit?
It kind of is. You know, a lot of the peacocks will be distracted by the beauty of their rival. There are some games that have actually ended with the peacocks just having sex, which, you know, the difference in peacocks versus, let's say, a Chick-fil-A. The Chick-fil-A chickens are all homosexual. I don't know if you know this.
I did not know that, but
yes.
That honestly does not surprise me.
Yes.
That's where the best meat comes from.
Yes, exactly. The gay chicken is just... so tender. And peacocks tend, they live more of a bisexual lifestyle.
Haven't been as pulverized.
Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. So the peacock, sometimes if they see those feathers extend, all they know is, wow, this other peacock is trying to court me right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll find yourself in a situation where the peacocks stop fighting and start making love.
Mm.
And a lot of gangs aren't with that. But you'd be surprised that some are, and it's actually been a beautiful way to clean up the streets.
And we'll be getting deeper into cockfighting and meat gangs right after a message from our sponsors. black guys are only in vogue if you're in an abusive relationship. Luckily, there's Your Diapies. Your Diapies sprinkles the OJ on your morning Simpson so you can chop through the day without losing your head due to a bad defense. And with our snuggest fit yet, Your Diapies adult brand adult diapers is guilty as charged. Don't let your juice run loose. Try Your Diapies. Your Diapies has padded the stats, adding 50,000 micropockets of odor-fleeing freshness onto the existing 13 pockets of career-ending social cues, and packaging them with our patented Cool Mint flavor crystals. So you can rest assured that the only buffalo in your bill isn't bull, just BS. Your Diapies adult brand adult diapers. Trust Your Diapies. Your Diapies. For when other diapers won't do. Support for the Sidebar Podcast is also brought to you by the animated feature film OG Mail, presented by Google, which stars Tracy Morgan as a plain white envelope trying to make it home in time for Christmas. All Brittany McGovern wanted for Christmas was to see her father back from the war, and if that wasn't possible, a pony. Unfortunately, she gets neither. Now it's up to her father's letter to deliver the news before little Brittany gets her hopes up. OG Mail co-stars Mark Wahlberg as Donnie the Ink, the bearer of bad news, Tim Allen as Mailman, the Mailman, and members of the band U2 as Rain, Sleet, Snow, and Murder. Murder? Maybe, but you'll have to wait to see for yourself in a theater. With a special cameo by Rosie O'Donnell as the urine-soaked mall Santa and Michael B. Jordan as Letter. OG Mail is not to be missed. See it everywhere, Memorial Day weekend, or anytime you want to pirate it. We don't mind. We worked hard on it, and we just want our money back. OG Mail. In theaters. Soon. And we're back with Jonathan Finkman of QSR Magazine. That's Quick Service and Casual Restaurant Magazine. With his article, Who's Schnitzeling My Wiener?
Yes.
But we were actually talking about peacock fighting, mm-hmm. and how the homosexual tendencies or bisexual tendencies
bisexual.
Of peacocks are actually solving gang violence in Florida.
Exactly, yes. And you'd be surprised with how angry the Florida government is about that. In a lot of ways, they need the gangs to eradicate each other so the cocaine distribution can... I'm sure you're familiar with the beverage Coca-Cola.
Of course. Coca-Cola. It was no longer, but it was manufactured at a time with cocaine.
Well, in Florida, they reissued the Coke with cocaine.
Oh, that does not surprise me.
Yes. It's riveting stuff, especially if you pair a peacock meat with Coke.
Mm-hmm.
Coca-Cola, of course.
Of course.
But the Coke.
With cocaine.
It has such a tender taste that makes you stay up all night long.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And of course the Coca-Cola and the bisexual peacock fighting has led to these meat gangs to actually come together. Just last week, there was a summit of the gang leaders. Tell us a little bit about how that went down, because it had a big effect on the local fast food, service industry.
Yeah, so Daquan Mitchell of the chicken,
was it?
Yeah.
Yes.
The chicken, yeah.
The de facto leader of the Florida chicken gang.
Because one of their leaders was murdered, and another leader is currently in, I believe, veterinary school. But Daquan really was the one who ushered in the idea of, we can all work together, you mm-hmm. know, peacocks, chickens, porks, other animal things, rice.
All foods in general can actually come together.
Come together.
It's not just, this is beyond just meat. It's all fast food and casual restaurant foods
can
work together.
He said something that really stuck out to me. He said, why stir the pot when we can make a pot roast?
Those are wise words.
Very.
And delicious sounding as well.
Yes.
But this new found message of love, of really an LGBT acceptance, mm-hmm. how is that affecting some of the right-wing gangs?
Oh, my goodness. You wouldn't believe. So there actually was a parade a couple of weeks ago of the LGBTQA, A being the animals of the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all animals. No humans were allowed, which was very weird watching a cow drive a mm-hmm. bus.
It took weeks for Francis to learn.
Weeks for him to learn. For them to learn. I have to be very mindful of Francis's pronouns. But there were protesters.
Mm-hmm.
There were. The Westburger Baptist Church did come out in attendance, and they did, you know, kind of cause a ruckus mm-hmm. there. And there was a lot of back and forth, but, you know, God bless the ingenuity of those animals, because mm-hmm. they really just kept pursuing. They kept pushing through.
And so that that parade alone is a lot of people are comparing it to what happened at Stonewall
mm-hmm.
in the 70s. That parade alone is going to have ripples across the country, so that some of the right wing consumers are also rebuking fast food.
Yep.
And Burger King and McDonald's are reacting in interesting ways, where they're having a sort of a don't ask, don't tell approach to their meat.
Yes. And the thing is, I love fast food. I'm the one, you know, QSR, we again stand for quick service and casual restaurant. Mm. I said, take the casual out of there. QSR makes no sense.
Mm.
There's nothing casual about fast food. There's nothing casual about quality service. There's nothing casual about a McDonald's or a Burger King or a White Castle or a Chipotle.
Mm.
What casual means to me is blasé. But food has a soul, especially if it's wrapped in a brightly colored wrapping with letters all over it telling you what it is. Why do we have that? Why do we need that? Get rid of that. I want to talk to my food so I'll know its future. And I believe the future in a lot of foods is in our classroom. We're going to see chickens in our classroom one day.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see roosters and peacocks and cows and pigs in our classrooms. And we're going to have to look back at history and realize what we did.
So you want to change the relationship that people have with restaurants, and the definition of a restaurant is a place where people pay to sit and eat meals that have been prepared on the premise.
Mm-hmm.
So you are trying to reach beyond just the place and to the people.
Yes. I want to get inside of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stick my mouth inside of every single person
mm-hmm.
and yell, hey, this is where we are now, but guess what's coming tomorrow? Tomorrow's the future.
Tomorrow is the future, and nobody should have to take a bullet into the colon as you did
mm-hmm.
to have this awakening.
Exactly. I use a colostomy bag. Okay. And every now and then I'll look at it and I'll say, who are you today? What makes you, you? And there's such a waning portion of my own soul and my own being that has to realize I am not just a man. I'm a man who is made of everything I've ever eaten, mm-hmm. everything that's stuck with me.
Scientifically speaking, you literally are what you eat. What you eat affects your makeup, your mood, your thoughts. It's very powerful stuff that you're dealing with.
Exactly. And you know, some people say that's why you don't have a wife. Some people say that's why your family stopped talking to you. I say that's why I talk to myself, because myself is compromised of everything.
And so you talk to the food because it is you.
Exactly.
And you are it.
Yes. And that's my main philosophy is right now we're in a destructive period.
Mm.
A lot of people are upset. A lot of people are angry at a lot of things, and that's why we tend to eat more, we consume more.
Mm.
We need this right now. We need that energy. We need that, hatred and that power and that fuel. So in the future, we can forgive ourselves and the food can forgive us.
Do you think there will ever be a time where we can look at our food and be okay with it? Where it will appreciate us as we appreciate it? Because at this moment, humans are, as you say, on a path to destruction. And I don't think we take care of our food in the same way that we take care or try to take care of ourselves.
God, I certainly hope so. That's one thing that I pray to Ganesh about every single night. I say, hey, Ganesh, do you think maybe one day there will be a mutual appreciation? I appreciate everything I eat because, again, I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for that salad.
You mentioned Ganesh. How does your faith play a role into the your studies of fast food? Because I myself am I have a touch and go relationship with faiths, but I do say prayer every once in a while over my Sunday meals. And what does that? How does it inspire you to deal with your foods?
The inspiration comes from the fact that I know that this food wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Ganesh or whatever religion you choose to or not to study. So for me personally, I always look back and hearken to the story of Noah, who had an ark.
Mm-hmm.
And in Noah's ark, he was told, hey, put on two animals of every kind, mm-hmm. snakes, spiders, peacocks, roosters, chickens, chicks, chickadees, foghorn leghorns, cows, cat dogs, dragons, Komodo dragons, dinosaurs, Dilophosaurus. And allow them to be on this ark because the world will be flooded.
Mm.
And the world did flood.
Mm-hmm.
Noah was right. And so many people and animals died, but so many lived. And that's how I view every day.
Mm.
I'm living for two pairs of animals, for two pairs of people, for breeding.
So for you, it's a miracle that you were even here. Your colonoscopy bag, you talk to your colonoscopy bag
yes.
because it is the miracle of life itself.
It's a miracle that any of us are here, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for fast food.
Now, fast food restaurants, QSR magazine, I want to talk a little bit about you have a article, or one parts of your article is that you give ratings to different restaurants.
Yes.
How do you decide the rating and what's your top five?
Well, the way that I make my decision is I go in, I order everything on the menu. They say, sir, are you sure? I say, yes, everything. I sit down in the restaurant. I observe the people who come in. I observe the people who come out. I do a taste test for every single item. Onion rings, french fries, tater tots, chili cheese fries, garlic fries, whatever is there, I am eating it.
And you want to get everything so that you can feel of the food. You get all the different meats.
The texture.
You can even actually differentiate between each meat
yes.
based on bite to bite.
Exactly. Yes. And I'll find myself sometimes sitting for 7, 8, maybe 10 hours in these restaurants talking to the food, talking to the people who work there, touching the items, holding on to the desk, going in and out of the bathroom, seeing the quality of the bathroom, smelling the toilet water, just to know if this water is purified or not.
Mm.
And from that experience, I then do a lot of PCP, and once I wake up, I then tend to write my reviews, and my star rating is based off of how much I remember from the previous meal.
And it is an 8.5 star metric.
It is, yes.
And it is very hard to get that half star.
That half star, it's very... Let's just say only two restaurants have ever gotten that half star.
And which two would that be?
That'd be the Wiener Schnitzel on Olive in Los Angeles, California. And number two, there is the Broadway McDonald's in New York City, New York.
Mm.
Very festive place. And I'm not sure what they're putting in their Oreo McFlurry, but boy howdy, let me tell you, it's a flurry of feelings.
And you are coming to us from where exactly?
I'm currently in Astoria.
Ah, okay. Yeah. You in your youth were actually in a meat gang, of course.
I was, yes.
You were of the pork variety.
I was part of the pork team until I was incarcerated, which is where I began my studies, and that's also where I became Muslim. And the Muslim sect of our prison told us, you know, no pork. And I said, oh boy, I got a story for you guys.
And you also found during your schnitzeling the wiener, your wiener schnitzel, that every single fast food chain and every single meat cart is run by a different gang.
It is, yes.
How did you get around all the cocks and the porks and the chickens during your time? Because you have some markings on you.
I do. And a lot of it was, you know, they see me walking around with a recorder. Granted, I've had several recorders stolen. But I talk to these people and say, I understand you. I get why you're selling meat. I get why you love this type of meat but hate this type of meat. Let's dive into that. Let's feel that around. Let's put our meats in our hands and really discuss why we love this. Why do you love chicken more than pork? Why do you love cock more than cow?
And you are an expert cockfighter, actually, a cockmeat fighter.
Yes, I actually got into the ring itself and fought a cock.
Hmm.
Yes. Very difficult. One of the hardest things I've ever done in my entire life, I'll be honest with you.
Are you the top cock?
I'm not. That goes to Roger.
Roger with the top cock meat.
Roger's he's a good cock.
Jonathan Finkman from QSR Magazine. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Coming up next week on the Sidebar, paper or plastic? You decide. I'm Clint Myers Novak. Thanks for stopping by.